Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. Well, if the old rhyme about St. Swithin's Day holds true, we are in for a 40-day dry spell. July 15 in Marion was sunny, hot, and dry. St. Swithin was the Bishop of Winchester in 852. When he died, he was buried as he had wished, in the graveyard by the door of the cathedral. He wanted worshippers to walk across his grave and the rain to fall upon it. In the 10th century, a new and ambitious bishop was appointed at Winchester, Athelwold. He made improvements to the church and had Swithin's remains dug up on the 15th of July in 971 and reburied within the church. It is claimed that a terrible storm blew up on the day St. Swithin was moved that lasted for 40 days, presumably as a sign of the saint's unhappiness. According to weather records, the closest it might have gotten that extended period of rain in modern times was in 1924, when, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, 30 of the 40 days after St. Swithin's Day were wet. Well, at least here and now, for the week or so, it is supposed to be cooler here than the past week has been, thank goodness, but still, be prepared to keep the garden watered. With this second wave of mid-90s heat, plants of all kinds have been prone to heat stress. Hopefully, the forecast of cooler weather will be proved accurate, but many of you have been wondering, can it really get too hot for tomatoes and peppers, our delectable gifts from South America? Well, absolutely. The heat is unlikely to be fatal for these nightshade plants, although, assuming you can keep them watered, and if you already have some fruits on your plants, you will be happy to know that these likely will be just fine in the long run. Until we get a break in the weather, though, the plants are struggling simply to retain enough moisture to stay alive, never mind working on ripening fruit and the seeds within. While many kinds of plants wilt in an effort to retain moisture, tomato leaves and those of some other kinds of plants will curl during hot weather. Both reactions are symptoms of plants trying to reduce transpiration. Transpiration is the movement of water from the roots through the entire plant and its leaves. When environmental conditions cause a plant to lose more moisture from its leaves than the plant's roots can supply, obviously the plant will wilt. This is especially critical when the heat continues for prolonged periods. Heat stress not only slows down plant production, but also makes your plant more vulnerable to diseases and pests. In hot weather, plants concentrate simply on surviving, just like us. There's also the problem of sun scald. Hopefully, your plants have plenty of foliage protecting the fruit. People who stake tomatoes and prune them to one or two stems, though, may have a problem. Tomato plants with scanty foliage would welcome a bit of shade from a light covering of spun polyester road cover or shade cloth across the tops of the plants. The real problem, though, comes from extreme heat concerns the blossoms. Daytime temperatures consistently above 90 degrees Fahrenheit or nighttime temperatures consistently below 75 Fahrenheit create all kinds of stress for these nightshade family plants. Blossoms either won't open or pollen actually is destroyed, and so no new fruit will set until normal temperatures resume. I've seen this recently on my own plants, which I happened to get into the ground rather later this year than I'd have liked, so I have none that have really set fruit as yet. These days I may see a few blossoms open, but they're mostly just fading and drooping without any tiny fruit appearing. In my last segment, I addressed the problem of blossom end rot on tomatoes, and occasionally on peppers, so I won't go into detail again on that, except to remind you to water regularly, since the cause is not so much the lack of calcium that's causing that, but the lack of consistent moisture, preventing the plant's ability to take up the calcium. If you need to review the directions, just visit the recorded program from July 4th from the on-demand page at WZMO's website. Now, are you keeping ahead of the weeds by following the advice I gave in an earlier broadcast? Not to say I have no faith in my listeners, but just want gently to remind gardeners that one common amaranth plant, for example, can produce anywhere from 100,000 to 500,000 seeds, depending on growing conditions, the species, and competition with other plants. The genus Amaranthus includes some 65 or 75 species. It includes annual weeds, agricultural grain, and ornamental cultivars. However, it's the annual weed species, commonly known as pigweed, that provides agriculture and gardeners alike with identification and control challenges. While this seed abundance is desirable when growing amaranth as a grain, as we have learned from the ancient Aztecs, or even as a colorful garden plant, as some species are, I expect few backyard gardeners really are interested in harvesting and utilizing the wild version of the plant as grain. But since the young plants are a nourishing pot herb, if you find them in your garden, pull them when they're only about 4 to 6 inches high, wash them well, and enjoy the many vitamins that they provide. Another common garden weed is lamb's quarters, sometimes called wild spinach, and in fact it's a plant that I've harvested from my yard for food for many years. But I always pick the plants when they reach only about 6 to 8 inches high, and always before they begin to bloom, since one's lamb's quarters plants left to mature may produce 72,000 seeds. You know, as I've said before and still wonder about, who counts all these seeds? Anyway, once these fall into your soil, you are doomed to deal with them forever after. For, like most other weed seeds, they're long-lived and will sprout whenever the soil is disturbed in coming years, bringing them within reach of sun and moisture. Purslane is a very prostrate plant that carpets the ground with fat, somewhat reddish, succulent stems and fat oval leaves. It's just coming into bloom now in many untended areas. A relative of the colorful and pretty low-growing portulaca, purslane's flowers only come in yellow, and they are very tiny. Like the previous two plants I mentioned, wild purslane not only is edible, but is a healthy addition to your diet, as it provides a good amount of omega-3 fatty acids. It also may be pickled for an interesting addition to a summer veggie tray. Purslane was used as a vegetable by early Europeans, and it's been cultivated in America since the middle of the 17th century. However, pollen and seeds of this species, found in the sediments of Crawford Lake, Ontario, probably were deposited as far back as 1350 AD. Seeds found in southern Kentucky, Illinois, and Louisiana date from between 1000 BC and 750 AD, so perhaps were imported during Stone Age immigration. If, instead of serving it for dinner, you opt to pull purslane, remember to dispose of it immediately into either a hot compost pile or directly into the trash. Do not leave it lying on the ground. This is because even a single plant that is in bloom has enough moisture in its stems and leaves to allow the flowers to mature and will scatter as many as 250,000 seeds that will keep you busy in the garden for years. I've referred just now only to a few of the hundreds of edible and medicinal wild plants that grow all over our countryside and in our yards and gardens, whether we've planted them or not. So, if the so-called weeds are gaining the upper hand in your neck of the woods, perhaps you would benefit by getting hold of a reputable field guide or a knowledgeable naturalist and beat the pigs to the pigweed. Not only will you get some healthy exercise by searching out and harvesting edible wild plants, you will improve your diet thanks to the greater nutrition offered by these gifts from Mother Nature. Just be sure that you are harvesting the right part of the right plant at the right time if you go foraging. Remember that even some of our common beloved garden vegetables and fruit plants have toxic parts as well. Know what you pick and eat must be your mantra. I know that between the watering chores, the heat, and keeping up with the weeds, we're all feeling exhausted. But it soon is time to think about planting another set of vegetables that prefer to mature in cooler weather. Yes, cool weather is still a thing, just in the seemingly distant future at this point. My next program in 2 weeks will offer some specific advice regarding late summer planting, but do start to consider it if for no other reason than we are told to avoid many grocery store produce items now, especially salad greens, due to the rising numbers of people in Ohio and across the U.S. battling cyclosporiasis, a parasitic infection that can cause diarrhea, nausea, and other gastrointestinal issues. It's often contracted through contaminated food or water. Most recently, I read that medical experts are zeroing in on lettuce as a likely vector. But in Michigan, health officials also noted that cyclosporiasis outbreaks in the United States and Canada have been linked to bagged salad mixes and kits to fresh cilantro, fresh basil, raspberries, snow peas, and green onions. I'm even happier this year that I've always been in the habit of planting both dill and cilantro every few weeks to assure a continuing fresh supply. I also keep my basil picked and pass it on to friends if I don't have an immediate use for it, because picking it keeps the plant sending out new branches rather than bolting to seed, which effectively ends the basil harvest for the year. But who doesn't love pesto on a plate of pasta in summer supper? Toss in a few chunks of tomatoes, still warm from the garden, sprinkle liberally with Parmesan, and you have a feast. Believe it or not, this is the time to start thinking about sowing more seeds of various kinds. I start the seeds of various members of the kohl family, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, and kale, indoors under simple shop lights in my basement, where the temperature is cooler as these vegetables prefer. For detailed information regarding growing under lights, turn to Google, or even better, visit the Marion Public Library and peruse their wide selection of garden books. And remember that the library still has free packets of seed in their seed library. Anyone having a library card may check out up to 10 free packets of seed within a month, and unlike the books that we borrow, the seeds are yours to keep. In addition to the kohl family of vegetables, even quicker and easier are the many varieties of lettuce and other healthy greens such as turnips, collards, spinach, and Swiss chard, all vegetables that take well to late-season planting in home gardens. Beets, bush beans, and peas also are good additions. My husband is not a big fan of vegetables in general, but he will happily accept a cupful of snap peas fresh from the vines to munch on as he watches television. While I myself have not had a need to try second plantings of cucumbers or summer squash, there are some bush cucumbers that are supposed to bear fruit within 60 days, and some 48-day varieties of bush-type summer squash. Read your seed packets for this information. Bear in mind, though, that late summer gardening requires the gardener to make some mental adjustments. Count back from the given frost date on your seed packet, but then add a little extra time to the calculation, since days are getting gradually shorter and cooler as fall plants mature. Don't expect them to produce as fast as in the warming, lengthening days of springtime. But a benefit is that the later planting often outsmarts pests who might be done multiplying, and in addition, some crops, such as greens, peas, cruciferous vegetables, all may taste sweeter when ripening in cool weather. It helps to moisten the target planting area well and then shade it for several days prior to planting your seeds or started plants. Well, that's it for this week. This is Carol Kelly saying, be sure to wash your store veggies and enjoy the ripening garden produce you have, and watch for monarchs that finally seem to be visiting our beautiful native flowers here in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it. Thank you for listening.